Scott. I'm the director, founder of Subsonic Music Festival, which is a festival that's been operating since 2009. So we're up to our 16th year now. It's a 3-day camping festival up in, at the foothills of the Barrington Tops.
People that don't know, can you sort of, I mean, you already did it, but can you explain just sort of what Subsonic Music Festival is and how it began?
How it began probably centers around the site. We're very blessed to have a beautiful site at the foothills of the World Heritage listed Barrington Tops. So it's sort of it's a bit of a sort of like a bush retreat camping area, caravan park. There's actually a hotel on site. Logistically, we feel very lucky. It's probably one of the most special festival venues in Australia, I think. I mean, I'm probably a little bit biased, but that is where the idea all began. My roots, I guess, as a younger person, going back 25 years, I was sort of a bit of a mad doofus. So I used to head to the bush every couple of weeks and, get into the whole bush doofing scene. So we were very much into camping and, combining camping with our love of music. And so that mindset sort of meant that anywhere we would see a cool place to camp, we'd be thinking, wouldn't this be cool to throw a party or whatever the case might be? So when I stumbled across Riverwood Downs, it just blew me away, and I immediately started dreaming about running a festival there. Now, with the venue having a hotel on site, I guess it was going to be a little bit more than just a classic Aussie bush doof. And that was where the idea of a festival sort of came about. We asked the owners, could we hold a party on their property? They said, "What kind of party?" And we said, "Electronic music." And they said, "No, you're not holding a rave on our property." And no, it's not a rave. We don't throw raves. And we really didn't consider ourselves to be ravers, I guess. But that is how it began. We got a big fat no.
Oh, well, there you
And
go.
I and then I sort of over the next couple of months, it was I just didn't really want to take no for an answer. So I called them back and I said, "Well, what if we do live music?" And they said, "Yeah, we'd be open to that." And that actually sort of formed the part of the music policy. I've been, I mean, I don't DJ anymore, but what I did DJ for around about 20 years. And so electronic music was our thing. It was our core business. Subsonic Music was a record label to begin with. We did touring, we did club shows, but I had never presented a band in a live music venue at a festival, any of that. So there was a little bit of a learning curve, but we really wanted to do something at this venue. It's that special. That was the beginnings. They sort of said, "Yes, we're open to it. And what sort of music would you like to do?" And so we kept it sort of, beats and bass oriented. So the live music that we have presented and still do present is still, there are some connections, I guess, with the electronic side of things, being our core business, if you will. So that's how it all began. We really didn't have plans to run a large music festival.
This year, Subsonic is marking its 16th year running, and over the last 16 years, it's definitely faced its fair share of setbacks, including the bushfires, the floods, the lockdowns, but it remained a truly independent New South Wales-owned festival. How have you navigated this and made sure the festival stays true to underground music culture?
I mean, I guess that's where we're rooted. We're into underground music. The program that we focus on each year is just music that we love. It's not the kind of music you would hear on commercial radio. We've been fairly strict with not having sponsorship. We used to be licensed. I think that's probably one of the big pros now with the experience. We're actually a BYO festival now. Even the license, the regulations and everything that sort of comes with it, you know. I mean, it's like if you try and walk into a pub with a drink bottle, then they're going to say, well, you can't do that. And it's the same at the festival. You know, so it has evolved a little bit over the years. Initially, it was the venue with the hotel on site running the bar. I think that's the only sponsorship we ever really had was alcohol sponsorship. But we've always, you know, that's been a core policy that we don't want to really be driven by, you know, the corporate dollar. Musically, obviously, you know, the music landscape has changed with social media. Social media wasn't a big thing when we started out, so obviously, you know, we take notice of social media. But again, with Australia seems to be a little bit of a cash cow for high profile artists these days, so we have probably taken more of a route that we focus on either emerging talent or artists that might otherwise be overlooked that, you know, are extremely talented. We book on talent and not on TikTok followers or Instagram followers, for example. So I think that's probably given us that sort of point of difference and has somewhat kept us a little bit representative of the underground. We've got quite a diverse music program, and we definitely, you know, we try and be representative of, you know, those different sort of market segments or genres, if you will, within the Sydney Underground.
And I mean, over the past couple of years, the festival and live music scene has definitely taken a hit with rising costs, tightening regulations. But in order to navigate these pressures, I mean, you've already sort of touched on it, but Subsonic has been described as operating on a community-led high-trust model. Can you explain more about what that means in practice, including your BYO camping that you've introduced?
I mean, nobody likes to have too many rules. I mean, I guess to an extent, some rules are necessary, but I don't think in the music industry we need to shy away from the fact that we're in a nanny state, and we all feel like that's presents its own challenges. So that's challenges, obviously, with operating costs, with compliance, that sort of thing. But it also does present challenges for the punter experience. So we're sort of, you know, I feel like we've made the right call there with that change. It's made it a lot more accessible. When we had a look at the costs of the bar, we thought we were making money, but we weren't perhaps considering the extra police, the extra security, the extra fencing, everything that went with it. So not only was it an easy decision, because it just doesn't really stack up, it's just made the experience, for us as staff, but more so and more importantly for the patrons, it's just made it a far more relaxed and enjoyable experience. And I'd like to sort of think not everybody drinks alcohol, but certainly being able to bring, you know, a bottle of water, a bottle of coconut water, or a six pack of beer to the dance floor, there's some fairly significant savings in dollars, but a fairly significant and noticeable difference, just in the general sort of energy and basic sort of experience, you know, coming to and from and sort of navigating your way around the site at the festival. So, you know, that's been a real positive change for us and no doubt for the patrons.
And sort of more on the regulations, do you feel that the current regulatory frameworks that are in place recognize the difference between grassroots community-driven events and more large commercial festivals?
In one word, no.
Yeah.
There is so the Music Festival Act that came in that was all brought about, you know, running safer festivals, and certainly, you know, we've operated under that act and the legislation, and no doubt the festivals are safer, and we, you know, we've worked really closely with New South Wales Health and police and ambulance and all of the bodies. Okay, it's safer, but one thing we have noticed is that regulation kicks in at 2,000 people, and it seems to be a little bit of a one size fits all. So at 2,000, our costs to run the festival almost double from 2,000 to 2,001. It's not really a model. I mean, if we look at things like the medical, they've got some minimum expectations. Yet a festival that might be, say, 50,000 people. And we use the same service providers. So we've spoken to our medical team about the numbers that they have at some of these larger festivals. In some cases, it might only be double the numbers of medical staff for a festival that's 10 times larger. So that's been my observation. I mean, I'm not here to criticize the policymakers, but to answer your question, I think there's probably some policy making that's perhaps been made around making sure their asses are covered, as opposed to really engaging the industry. And you know, I mean, for the most part, I know that Subsonic and a lot of my industry peers were running safe festivals. We had the same level of care with something like medical. When the legislation came in, that level of care was the same, but we probably had four times as many staff as what was needed. And that makes it very hard to make ends meet. So sometimes these regulatory costs, they have to come off the budget elsewhere. And the only part of the budget that we really have control over is the creative side. So it's the artists that we book and the production and the stages that those artists are playing on. So it is really unfortunate that, you know, if you've got 100% of the budget, or let's say 20% of that 100% is the small portion we have control over. If 50% of that gets taken off us, it means that we're really struggling to find the balance between looking after the artists and, you know, let's face it, you know, like we're all creative people, and we'd much rather the money be going to artists and not to the government.
Yeah.
Shall we say.
And even beyond those financial and regulatory challenges, what's at stake culturally if independent festivals like Subsonic disappear?
The grassroots festivals are the ones that are focusing on either emerging artists. I mean, to give a few examples, in the earlier years, we've booked artists that are huge now. I mean, Boris Brescia, Honey Dijon, Jamie Jones. I mean, we even booked Nile Rodgers before, so Sheik and Nile Rodgers before Nile collaborated with Daft Punk. I wouldn't say he's an emerging artist. He's probably more of a heritage sort of legacy act, you know, but I guess these grassroots festivals provide a space for people to hone their craft. And, you know, the reason I mentioned some of those artists, they've gone on, well, they're all international ones, but locally, I guess we've got, I don't know, like Hermitude, Sampa the Great. There's some artists that I guess have gone on to play much larger shows, and their profile has really, really grown. We're just one of the smaller shows of the many hundreds of shows that they probably played before their profile grew. But, you know, there needs to be a space, whether it be smaller live music venues, pubs, whatnot, or whether it be grassroots festivals, those spaces need to be provided and I guess supported to an extent, or at least acknowledged by the government and the policymakers, so that you know, you've got to start somewhere. You don't become big overnight. So
yeah. And finally, what can fans expect from this year's festival? What's the lineup looking like?
Yeah, I guess it's a focus on underground. We have actually decided to shrink the festival a little bit, just to try and keep the experience. I guess there was a few learnings with moving to BYO. I've always sort of said that I'm a big believer you need to work within the policy. There's no point trying to push back with policymakers or anything like that. But one thing we did learn with that 2000 line in the sand, if you will, that where the Festival Act kicks in, is that we needed to then have 4,000, 5,000 people before we could even cover costs. So there was a real risk there. But we a lot of the feedback and listening to patrons over the years was that they really enjoyed the intimacy of our festival. The larger we grew, the more feedback we did get that perhaps we were losing that boutique sort of type festival feel. So we've made a call this year to become a little bit more boutique. We've got no big main stage. We're focusing on the stages that I guess have been some of the fan favorites, if you will, the River Stage, the Paradiso. So we've got three similar sized stages all dotted along the river. You can literally sit in the river, listen to music from the river. It's an amazing layout, but I mean, generally speaking, or to sum up the festival for those that haven't been, we are 3 days of camping in a really beautiful riverside site nestled in the foothills of the mountains, with everything musically spanning from sort of live bands, world music, funk, soul, hip hop, and then on the electronic side, sort of the full spectrum, from house techno through to sort of, psytech, psytrance. And then on the bass side, things like UKG, drum and bass. I guess, with mention to us sort of somewhat being representative of the underground, we're fairly blessed to work with some crews that are doing some really amazing things. That can change year on year, but a couple of the crews that we're working with are the Day Shift guys, which sort of focus on more of the bass, UKG sort of side of things. They're doing really, really great things in Sydney, and I know they expanded to Melbourne this year. They're running a full day on the River Stage on the Saturday. And I mean, our core business really is sort of the techno, the house, the sort of doofier type, proggy, progressive, psytrancey doofier type stuff. We'll still have all of that. So it's I guess it's somewhat, I guess when I talk about my roots and going back 25 years being in the doof, we've still got a doofy type feel, without being totally doof music oriented. We've got a really diverse music program, yep, spanning all of those things that are sort of beats and bass sort of oriented.
Sounds good. And we're only a couple weeks out, correct?
We're 3 weeks out,
3 weeks
yes. So
out. There you
it's going to
go.
feel like
The
about
countdown is
three sleeps for me,
on.
I think.
Well, perfect. Thank you so much for coming on and talking with me today.
Thanks, Anthea. My pleasure.